in the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world. We cover all of that, you know. Isn't that amazing, a radio signal that actually covers one way or the other the entire world? It's really something to contemplate. I try not too frequently. I'm Art Bell, stepping in tonight for George Norrie, who's taking deserved days off. As I said last night, when you do this program, you know damn well it takes a lot more than the 4 or 5 hours, whatever it is you put into it on the air. That's sort of like the tip of the iceberg. The rest of it takes up the rest of the day, actually. So he certainly deserves the time off. How you doing? It is a Friday night, Saturday morning, and this has traditionally been a kind of a strange night. And I wouldn't want to make any exception tonight. So, we're going to throw caution to the wind, do open lines. And I mean just that, open lines. Heaven knows what's going to happen. I will accept one thing. There was one thread that was consistent in my email all day long was, do a time traveler line. It's been a long time since anybody's done that. Well, no problem. I'm not that hard to convince on this subject, as you know. Therefore, I will dedicate one line. All the others are just open letter rip talk radio. But one line I'm dedicating to time. Now, what do I mean by that? We'll get more into detail about it, but basically it's reserved for those who claim to have actually traveled in time. Now that's pretty loose, but close enough. For those who have actually traveled in time. That number is area code 775-727-1222. Now, no matter what the guy with the deep voice says regarding first-time callers, that line is tonight reserved away for people who actually claim to have traveled in time. And that number again is area code 775-727-1222. It is of particular interest to me. Covering something we covered last night, this incredible new antenna that I put up. This is the mother of all antennas. It's a, you know, big, giant, 1,000-foot loop times two. With one being at 70 feet and one being at 63 feet and a circumference of 1,000 feet. Is a really big antenna with unusual properties, producing about 400 volts right now. Mysteriously. Or maybe not. Maybe there is an answer to this. And in fact, in a moment, I'll go into that. If I don't do this, I'm liable to forget it. So let's take the initial break here, shall we? And then I'll launch. There are photographs on the Coast to Coast AM .com website of the antenna that I was telling you about. Very exciting. Got it up just yesterday, actually. Let's see, was it yesterday? Yes, no, the day before. Actually, the night before in the dark. And it was pretty incredible. Anyway, I got a million emails about this. Thank you all very much. Here's one from Ken, W6MRN. He's a ham. Hi, Art. I've been keeping tabs on your signal strength here in Tuhunga. After the second added loop, due to the current instability of the ionosphere, due to the barrage of CMEs, that's from the sun, right, folks? Coronal mass ejections. It's difficult to gauge at this point because of that, but my first impression is that the signal is more consistent, in other words, less frequent QSB dips. It's now at plus 30 to 35, and he goes on and on about my signal. Thank you very much. He says, with regard to your antenna, I suspect that you have discovered the very same thing that others have observed. Shall we probe the secrets, in quotes, the secrets of our early protege, the one and only Nikola Tesla? Of late, we've had very high levels of interplanetary magnetic field values. Could this be the cutting of the magnetic lines of force flowing in and out of the planet? We know that very high levels of magnetic disturbances from the sun cause disruptions, in other words, popping of circuit breakers, of high voltage inner city long distance transmission lines from time to time and so forth. Yes, indeed. Ken, I think it's entirely possible that we should be looking toward Nikola Tesla and what he was doing in answer to what I'm experiencing. I don't know yet. Maybe not. Maybe there's some very conventional explanation for the voltage that ought not be there, certainly a lot more research about it is in order, especially now with the addition of this second wire and the additional voltage. It's crazy. We're further away from any induction from the power line, so I don't know. It's a mystery. And then there's also WB6OHK, another ham, says he knows the area, and says there's an iron mountain south of me, that's in front of out here, that occasionally shoots lightning bolts, he says, into the ionosphere. In March of 1955, two of us spent a month based in Pahrump prospecting for uranium. We had a Super Cub and a Jeep, stayed at a retired prospector's home out in the countryside, southwest of the only store there at the time. That's true, there used to be one here. It had a dirt road, and we staked down tie ropes for the Cub and parked it next to the miner's home. His name was Rusty. He taught us how to use dynamite. We had an airborne scintillator and another handheld, too. We traveled all over the Pahrump Valley. When we took the Jeep or the airplane to Las Vegas, we noticed one particular mountain shoots bolts up into the sky over 15 times. We saw it 15 times. Have you noticed it? No. I sent an email to NASA when the shuttle went down, telling them about the mountain that could have been the bolt through it. Viewers in Eastern California reported a blue streak from the shuttle as it passed over the mountain at this time. That's true, they did. I'm not certain it was this, but he says, anyway, this Iron Mountain is the source of a tremendous electrical field, and your antenna, by the way, is at the northern side of that electrical field. The bigger antenna, the more voltage you'll pick up. Yes, well, obviously. And then I was considering the bigger questions that were asked by or attempted to be answered by last night's guest from London. That was it was an interesting guest, but you know, he was quoting everybody else in the world, and yet his central message seemed to be there is no God. No, that's wrong. There is a God, but he doesn't care. That simplified, that's what it boils down to. That's what he was saying. There's God, but he doesn't care. If we blow our own heads off, if we destroy ourselves in nuclear warfare, if we do well or if we do poorly or become extinct, he doesn't care. Basically, he's a creator. He's not paying any attention. I don't know if I can buy that. But despite the fact that he was shuffling papers around, looking for quotes from other people to talk to me, there were a couple of things that came up last night that really caught my attention. We were talking about the really big questions, right? Like, hey, Dad, how high is the sky? You know, the extent, when you extend that, of course, becomes where is the end of everything? It's all about space and time, right? We now look out with telescopes to 15 billion miles plus light years, I guess I ought to say. That's a lot of miles. Light years out, 15 billion light years out when it all began. If it all began, we were talking about that. Well, what happened? Was there a big bang? He rather seemed to think so. I was trying to pry his views out of all of this massive data that he had. He seemed to think so. But again, his central message would appear to have been, if you listen closely, that there's a God, but he just doesn't much care. But as we moved through that discussion last night, one thing really caught my attention, and I guess I said it myself, really. I came after him and I said, hey, what if all of this is an oscillation? Oscillation, I think he might have mentioned the word oscillation. I took off from there. Have you ever pointed a camera at a monitor? What you could see, if you had resolution sufficient to display it, you could see infinity. It's feedback. It's oscillation. It's feedback. And maybe that is the answer to everything. There is no real beginning, and there is no real end. There is only oscillation, constant change. And so maybe everything is, in essence, a big circle, an infinite circle. Try pointing a camera at a monitor sometime, and of course you will see the little tiniest picture of the monitor with the camera about a million light years away, you know, the smallest thing that the monitor is capable of displaying, it constantly echoes itself. It is a feedback loop. And what I'm suggesting is, I guess, that one possible answer to the conundrum of, you know, did it begin? Is it a steady state universe? Will it expand forever? One possible answer is it'll do all of that because it's nothing but one big oscillation, one big loop back upon itself. I'm not sure if that's going to register with all of you or not, but I'm suggesting that as an answer to, you know, probably one of the biggest questions in the whole world, right? Who are we? How'd we get here? What's out there? That's a biggie. So I thought I would suggest that to you, and you might have some comments. Remember that one line there. See, I see it going now like crazy. That time traveler line. That's area code 775-727-1222. It's a very simple number, but it's only for those of you that claim to have traveled in time. And perhaps travel in time is possible, even if my explanation of this oscillation, this never-ending feedback, even if that's the nature of everything, it still might be possible, certainly, to travel in that never-ending loop. And with, you know, all things, eventually, if we don't blow ourselves to smithereens, are going to become possible, and one of those would be time travel. And if indeed one day it becomes possible, then there would be time travelers here now. Or at least there would be a very high likelihood that there could be and would be. Whether they'd be vacationing, sort of time slumming, as depicted in some movies, or whether they're here to change things, if that's possible. That's another whole discussion, right? They'd be here, though. And they might be willing to speak out. Now, only you can be the judge of the veracity of what you hear. You know, I mean, we hear some pretty strange things on here, right? The rest of the lines are all open lines. So I don't know what we're going to get. One thing I would like to ask you to keep to a minimum is I understand that you all want to say, my God, it's great to hear your voice, and it's been a long time, and it has, you know, and so, but if you would, for the sake of the continuity of the program, not do that, you know, so I understand why Rush did what he did. If you want to say dittos or whatever you come up with, say that rather than everything else. Now, listen very carefully. When I tell you we live in strange times, disease, action from the sun, action from the ground, earthquakes, tornadoes, more than we've ever had. We do live in strange times. Right now, the sun is attacking us. Let me read you a little bit of this. A recent series of three major flares have been observed from the sun. All of these flares have been from a complex sunspot near the region at the center of the solar disk. The flare events all reached R3 level on the NOAA radio blackout scale. In addition, an S2 solar radiation storm is in progress in association with a major flare activity. G3 geomagnetic storms can lead to problems with electrical power systems, including the need for voltage corrections, the triggering of false alarms on some protective devices. These storms can also affect spacecraft operations, including surface charging on satellite components. Increases in drag for low Earth orbiting satellites, it actually slows them down and could even put them in danger of reentering. Corrections for orientation problems, attitude effects include intermittent satellite navigation and low frequency radio navigation problems, intermittent HF radio and aurora as low as Illinois and Oregon. R3 radio blackouts result in widespread HF radio communication outages on the day side of the Earth and can also degrade low-frequency navigation signals. S2 solar radiation storms can lead to infrequent single-event upsets in spacecraft operations. Small effects on HF propagation through the polar regions, possible small effects on navigation at polar cap locations. That's all going on right now. We are in an 11-year solar cycle. We're always in an 11-year solar cycle, folks. You know, upside, downside, whatever. We're always in it. And this one should be on the wane. Very much on the wane right now. Cycle 23 should be pooping out, but instead, the sun is going berserk. at the moment. So, kind of interesting times, I would say. A little bit of news after 11 days at Orange. The national terrorism alert level has been dropped a notch to yellow. This is after officials determined the threat of imminent al-Qaeda strikes had diminished. And they base all this on the amount of chatter they hear going on out there. You know, al-Qaeda operatives presumably talking to other al-Qaeda operatives. Saying things like, who knows, the time to strike is now something. Anyway, they've lowered it. China is denying any SARS cover-up whatsoever. They didn't cover anything up. China says they didn't. A top Chinese health official denied claims that Beijing tried to hide the seriousness of the SARS virus, saying Friday the government warned about SARS as early as February, and early efforts to fight it were slowed by poor information in encouraging, they say it's an encouraging sign, that the World Health Organization said Friday it'll remove Singapore from the list of countries affected by the SARS virus because now they've gone the requisite 20 days with no new cases. Now the war. You know, I'm not really sure why we fought the war. I'm very glad that our troops did impeccable manner that they did, and of course they really did do their job. You got to give them that. They did a hell of a job. But you know, I don't know why we fought the war, and I still don't. And look at this today, Washington, May 30th. The United States on Friday announced a major expansion of so far fruitless efforts to find chemical or biological arms in Iraq, forming a team now, get this, of 1,400 U.S., British, and Australian experts who are going to take up the hunt in Iraq. The Pentagon named Army Major General Keith Dayton to head the new Iraq survey group, which is going to go and try to find alleged arms that Washington cited as its main justification for the invasion of Iraq in March that toppled President Saddam Hussein. Or at least his statue there on the horse that toppled. No such weapons have been found. And the move was announced just hours after Lieutenant General James Conway, the top U.S. Marine officer in Iraq, said a U.S. intelligence was, quote, simply wrong, end quote, in leading the military to believe that the invading troops were likely to be attacked with chemical weapons. Holy smokes. I mean, you think about that for a second. For a lieutenant general to say something like that is probably, possibly career-threatening, I would think. Wouldn't you? That was, after all, the U.S., but it's why we fought that war. To what? Protect against the possibility that they had, or well, I guess the assurance that they had weapons of mass destruction, that they probably had the intent to use them against us and or give them to terrorists who would use them against us. That's why we said we fought the war. And so if you're a lieutenant general and you make a statement like this, I don't know. You're probably in trouble. Let's look at it again. No such weapons have been found, and the move was announced just hours after Lieutenant General James Conway, the top U.S. Marine officer in Iraq, said U.S. intelligence was, quote, simply wrong, end quote, in leading the military to believe that the invading troops were likely to be attacked with chemical weapons. So, I wasn't really sure before the war why we fought the war. And I'm still not sure why we fought the war. It's easier to believe, and I know the whole conspiracy thing about oil, right? We fought it for oil. I did hear we're establishing 4 permanent military bases in Iraq. That'd be right in the middle of the Middle East influence area, right? So that could not have been our reason, right? Oil, well, we always deny that. We say that's not the reason why we had the war, right? Not oil. It was the information on weapons of mass destruction. Right now, the top military guy in Iraq says, that all the deep thinkers in Intel were wrong. So, I don't know. Anyway, I'm glad. I'm certainly glad we won. All right, open lines are ahead, and that means absolutely anything. And I have no idea what that could be. I'm Art Bell. You'll stay where you are and buckle in, please.
Presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
She sings, life is a circle. Well, maybe it is. She actually denies it, but that's the way I look at it. I think life, in fact, everything is a circle, a never-ending circle, an oscillation. Pictures and things that go on, apparently, forever. That's something to contemplate. That's a sort of lot what we were talking about last night. If you'd like to continue some of that discussion tonight, I would love to. Think of it, an oscillation, a never-ending oscillation that just goes on forever. So our perception here as human beings on Earth is that there is no beginning, there is no end. It just keeps on going. I suppose that it would be fair to suggest that a large percentage of the callers who are going to call the time traveler line are yanking our chains. And they probably are. However, I am so convinced that time travel is real and that time travelers are out there that I do think only you can be the judge. And, of course, I will sit here and judge as well as we listen about the veracity of the caller. But I'm telling you, they're out there. And if we have to go through 9 strange ones to get to one real one, and we really do get to one real one, then it's worth it. And I think I've had, in the past, some real ones online when it comes to time travel. So let's make a first effort and say, on the special time traveler line, you're on the air. Hello there? You're not going to speak, huh?
Yeah.
Ah,
hello.
You are going to speak.
Yes, my name is Dave.
Dave.
Steve.
Steve. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, Steve
all right.
Smith.
Smith. Oh, yeah. All right, Mr. Smith. So,
yes.
So you're claiming to be a time traveler, eh?
Yes, sir. I don't know how much time you're going to allow me, but I want to tell you this started when I was about 6 or 7 years old.
What started?
Okay, when I would go to sleep at night, I would go into like a stupor, and I would see the stars. I would close my eyes, and my brother, he would actually sit there with me while I was closing my eyes, and I was starting to fall asleep, and I would describe the sky, the clouds, and everything, and then I would go ahead and tell him what it was, and he would run outside, and he would describe, yes, you, that's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And that started the whole program.
But that's not time travel, is it?
Wait a minute, let me finish.
Well, I'm going to let you finish, but that's more like remote viewing, isn't it, Steve?
Oh, no.
Well, yes,
okay.
It is.
Okay, and as this progressed through my lifetime, I am now pushing 60 years old.
You don't sound it. You don't sound it.
Well, thank you. But I am pushing 60. 2 years ago, all this stuff stopped.
All right, you're now distorting, cellular distortion, Steve.
Oh, okay. I'm on cellular phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my yacht.
You're on your yacht?
Yes.
Oh, you have a yacht?
Yes, sir. I'm on my yacht.
That's very impressive. All right, Steve, on your yacht. So now tell me about the time travel aspect. As the years progressed, what?
Okay, as the years progressed, every night I would go to sleep, I would travel through time. And I would go, and I could see the stars passing me. I don't know how fast I was going.
Steve, how do you know you weren't dreaming? I mean, it's an obvious question.
Because it happened every night.
Every night,
would rack my brain. I would talk to
How do you know you were time traveling? In other words, you could see the stars passing, so you were obviously traveling. And, of course, scientists speculate if you travel far and fast enough, then you will, in effect, travel in time.
Let me turn my radio down. I'm
turn it off,
feedback.
Actually. Oh, yeah, feedback.
Okay, there it is.
Another
it's
subject,
off.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Now I got... Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The reason why I know this was time travel was because as I progressed through this dream over the last 52 years, because like I said, I'm pushing 60.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time.
And I'm picking up...
So we got to get to it here.
Okay. The entity that was taking me, there was an entity taking me.
Yes.
And we was going through time.
Yes.
And we would stop occasionally through our trip. And this entity
in what direction?
Stopping.
Yes. Yeah. There was a Christmas story about this. Now, what did you go forward or reverse in time?
No, sir. We are going forward.
Forward. So, let me, cutting to the quick here, obviously you got to see some of the future.
Oh, yes,
well,
sir.
By all means, give me a couple of high points. That's really what I want.
Oh, a couple of high points during this bad depression of stock markets and the bear market and all this stuff when it was down so bad.
Yes.
I made 121% interest on my money.
121% in today's environment?
Yes.
And that's why you're sitting in your yacht calling me right now.
Yes, sir. And I have been retired.
All right. So, in other words, you used the information then that you gained to make good trades and become rich.
Yes, sir. Not rich, sir. I am
well off.
I never wanted to be rich.
Comfortable.
I didn't want to be famous or nothing. I just want to be very comfortable
and
do the things I want to do and enjoy the world that the people call him God. I call him an envelope entity.
Hmm. Well, okay, well, listen, I've got to go, but good luck with the SEC. There was a story which purported to be a real story recently about a man who was being investigated by the SEC. I don't have the story in front of me, but the Securities and Exchange Commission. And when they popped him, for insider trading, he told them that he was a time traveler. I mean, that's, you know, can you imagine laying that on the Securities and Exchange Commission? Well, yeah, hey, I'm a time traveler, and that's how I did this. Now, he, according to the story, made some incredible trades, incredible, impossible trades. He put money on things that just went through the roof, you know, kind of like this guy was just saying. And it was an intriguing story, to be sure, because if true, it would indeed, wouldn't it, verify the possibility of time travel. Gonna go and make $1 million, right? And why not?
Well, Art, because it's wrong.
Well, yeah, but people would do it. It's human nature. If they knew, then, like Steve there on the yacht, they'd get themselves comfortable. So, you never know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hello, Art?
Hello, yes.
How you doing, Art? This is Mike in Fontana, California.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing? That was an interesting call, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Very weird. But I wanted to bring up last night's guest. I heard most of the conversation last night.
Yes.
About intervention.
You mean as in God
as
putting
in
his
God.
Hand down and stopping
yeah.
a car accident or doing good or bad or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I believe that there is a God because he works miracles. And the one thing why I believe that he works miracles is because...
I understand that, and I understand you probably have a good reason for thinking he works miracles, and sometimes it seems like he does, but he also works...
Mysteriously.
Let me get as dramatic on my side as you're getting. Let's face it, millions of Jews, went into gas chambers. I mean, horrible, horrible things happen. And, is it the same hand?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Jews have gone through so much horror.
It's not just the Jews, sir. There's horror around the world every day.
Yeah.
I mean, just horrible things happen.
Religious wars have been going on for
exactly. So is this all intervention, sir?
To me, I believe that God allows suffering and pain because we allow our free will to take hold of us. And to do the wrong thing is to do the wrong thing. To do the right thing is to the.
Are you saying that when bad things happen, it's our free will? When good things happen, it's God's hand intervening?
No, not particularly. Not in good deeds or good ways. I believe that. Give an example. I have a cousin in Chicago who's been having seizures and spells for the last year, and. He's been just bedridden, and there's been a lot of grief on my mom's side of the family, especially my aunt, because she's the mother of my cousin. And,
yes.
There's a lot of things that, but that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about mysterious ways that God can work through.
But that is, on the other side of the coin, that's always the answer you get when it's inexplicable and
inexplainable.
Yes, it cannot be explained. Then inevitably you get the God works his ways, his mysterious ways. That's the only answer you get. And for many, it's enough. It's not for me. It's not for me. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in God, because I think I do, actually. I absolutely think I... I absolutely think, that's quite a phrase, huh? I'm pretty sure there is a God. I really lean heavily on that side. But I do have questions, and a lot of clergy are not able to answer them. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And a lot of times that's the only thing you get in answer to the bad things, the terrible things that happen. Well, he works in mysterious ways. Well, they really are mysterious. You got to accept that. Or else. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling from Burlington, Vermont.
Way up in Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah, Dave. Listen now, in response to the last caller, with God, there's two laws, one supernatural and one natural. And when you violate either one, there are going to be consequences. That's just something to think about.
Which do you think is the greater power?
Art, you make me think.
Yeah, well.
Listen, in reference to the bacterium falling from outer space.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. There was a report on television. Some meteorologists did a study with dust storms in the Middle East being carried into the stratosphere and staying there until it precipitated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the bacterium that was brought to the stratosphere would drop down through the precipitation, then that bacteria would be accountable.
For disease? Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, sure. I agree with you completely. I've got that story here. And, this is very interesting. I mean, this appeared, the article is SARS in the Stars, right? You might want to look it up. It's in The Lancet, very well-respected medical journal in Britain. And they are finding stuff coming to us from space. They recovered biomaterial at high altitudes that only could have come from space. Now, we are constantly being bombarded by ice in the form of varying things that hit the Earth, you know, piece of a comet, a little tiny cometary piece. Now, it's water, you know, it's actually water. And inside that water, there could be bacteria that once they hit the atmosphere and things are a little warmer and nicer, why, they begin to percolate. So it could be that SARS came from the stars, and it could be that anything drops on us at any minute like SARS. You're kind of like, here you go, surprise, here, deal with this. You know, is that intervention, is that one from the hand of God? Or does it have something to do with free will? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hi, Arbel. This is Grace in Eugene, Oregon.
Yes.
I'd like to let you know that I've been abducted by an alien.
Abducted by an alien?
Yes. And how I know that was I've been having these really bad, horrendous headaches.
Yes. But a lot of people have headaches, right? That doesn't mean they've been created by aliens.
True, but I had an MRI done, and there's two growths in my brain.
Two growths in your brain?
Yes, they're like white, what they call bright spots. And there's no explanation why they should be there, but they just are.
You have two bright spots, and after they gave you an MRI, they said they probably put it up on the screen, and they said, look at these two bright spots in your brain.
Right.
They shouldn't be there. They should. Is that what they said? They shouldn't be there, but they are?
Yes.
And what did they say?
They should not be there.
And what did they say they thought they were?
They don't know. And, before I went in to have the MRI done, I was on a ship that had a great big bright light on it, you know, like the operation.
You were taken aboard a spacecraft.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Wait a minute. It wasn't a dream.
No.
How do you know you were on board a spacecraft? Might seem like a silly question, but did you just suddenly be there or what?
I'm not really sure. All I know is that there were some grays. I guess that's what you call them, ones with the big black eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Two notches in the face for the nose. A very small mouth. And
what were you doing? Were you walking down the street? Were you asleep in bed when this happened?
I was just laying down in bed, yeah.
Laying down in bed. And so you're sure now that you didn't fall asleep and this was some sort of dream. This was real.
I'm positive because I was in a lot of pain.
I understand you may have a medical malady, but whether or not it's as a result of, you know, implants put on board your head on board this ship, that's another question. Do you have any evidence that this is what happened to you?
The only thing I have as evidence is the MRI for the bright spots are in the brain.
Hmm. Bright spots. You know, normally somebody would do an MRI on somebody and find bright spots on the brain would be tempted to take you to a neurosurgeon. And
that's who did it. It was a neurosurgeon that did this.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So what do you think's going on? I mean, only you know what's in your head. Are you being told to do things? Is there some communication going on? Are you having some effect from whatever it is that's in your brain?
Just a lot of pain.
A lot of pain?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't sound too good.
No, it's not. It's not fun.
All right. So the next time somebody out there wishes for an abduction, they should remember this lady's story. A lot of people have called up and said, I wish I'd be abducted. I wish they'd take me. Let them take me. Well, how'd you like to end up with a couple of bright spots in your brain and constant headaches? From it, you might want to be very careful about that. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Charlie at KCMO, 710 kilohertz, Kansas City, Missouri.
That's the place, yes.
I've got a solution, I think, to the UFO field based on one of your calls.
You have a solution?
About 4 years ago.
Wait a minute. You have a solution to the question of UFOs?
Yes. Uh-huh. Why the government's keeping them secret?
Why?
I have a feeling that the caller called in about 4 years ago and said that he had met a gray from the future, about 50 years in the future.
Yes.
And that I don't know if you remember the call or not.
Not specifically, but I can picture it occurring.
And I'm wondering if that's the reason. You know, we were ordered off the moon, according to a Robert O'Dean report on George Norrie.
Uh-huh. You mean when Robert O'Dean was on with George?
Yes.
Robert said we were ordered off the moon.
That's right.
No kidding.
A very high official, which was Ed Mitchell.
Ed Mitchell, the astronaut?
Yes. Uh-huh.
How could Ed... that doesn't make sense.
Ed told Robert O'Dean in person that we were ordered off the moon around 1970 or 1969.
You know, I've interviewed Ed a whole bunch of times, and he's never said anything like that.
I know it. This is brand new information. It just came out.
I'll say it's... Holy mackerel. All right, look, we're coming to the top of the hour here, and so I'm going to have to hold it there. Can anybody verify what that man said? Did astronaut Ed Mitchell, did he actually say we were ordered off the moon by high official? Who could that be? And why would they do it?
On the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
Here I am again. All right, now, it's open lines. Anything you want to talk about, anything at all, is fair game, with the exception of the time travel line, reserved for those who claim to have traveled in time. And I'm quite serious about that, and I have a low threshold of tolerance for obvious frauds. So if you're going to be a fraud, be a good one. That line is area code 775-727-1222. That's 775-727-1222. It's the only purpose for that line, despite what the man with a deep voice says, Ross Mitchell. So in a moment, we'll continue with the unknown. Once again, into the night. On my time traveler line, you are upon the air. Hello. Hello.
are you looking for?
Who am I looking for?
Must be Nunchy.
I'm looking for a blonde about... No, just kidding. Who are you looking for?
Who am I looking for?
Yeah.
Nobody.
But nevertheless, you did call my special time traveler line, so you are a time traveler, right?
Yes.
All right. So what shall we call you?
I don't think you could call me a time traveler because I don't know how to time travel. I don't have a machine, you know.
I meant as in a name. Let's begin simply here.
I traveled into the future.
Well, that's good. But what is your name?
Nunchi. It means the little people in Cherokee.
Nunchi, really?
Yes, that's
an elegant name. All right, Nunchi. You traveled into the future.
Yes, in 1988.
How did it happen?
I went to bed. I went to sleep. I woke up early morning hours. Everybody asleep. And my bedroom door was open. And I knew I must walk. I must get out of bed and walk down the hall. And when I went down the hall to the entry hall, the front door was open. And I knew I was going to go meet ghosts, people who had died. I thought of them as ghosts. I thought it was going to be extremely boring. Happy about this.
Meeting dead people? Yeah, I mean, why did you, first of all, why, even with what happened, would you have a knowing that this was what was going to occur?
Because the Great Spirit, his name is Jesus, he told me.
Jesus?
Somehow he spoke to my innermost being, to my heart,
so
and I knew.
Jesus told you were about to meet dead people?
Yes, but I didn't quite understand him. So I was in my ability to understand him. I thought, oh, it's going to be ghost driven. Oh, they're going to be see-through. There's going to be mist around them. When they speak, it's going to echo. You know, it's going to be very boring.
Your standard, most to your surprise?
I knew that my path was to walk out into the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the end of the driveway. We have chain link fence. I live in Sacramento, California,
mm-hmm.
and I put my hand on the chain link fence post,
mm-hmm.
and I saw lines of people, and these were all the people who had ever
lived.
Yes, everybody who has ever lived.
Did they seem happy?
They did not seem happy
they
or
did,
sad,
they didn't
either
seem...
way.
No.
And at the time, I hadn't yet been enlightened at the At the end, I would start to understand. I thought they were just ghosts. So my attitude was very rude and disrespectful because I thought it was all very boring.
Hmm.
I didn't realize what was taking place was real, and it was in the future. And
are you suggesting then that the future you saw, in the future you saw, everyone was dead? That's what you're telling me?
No, I don't know. At the time of my death. This was at the time of my death.
Your death?
Yes.
Okay.
I met people, and when you die, you go through these receiving lines, and you must take both your hands. They reach out to you with both their hands. You grasp hands with them. And
you know, somehow you would think when you die, lines would be one thing that you'd be able to avoid, but no, huh?
No. But it's interesting because something was taking place that I was understanding in my innermost being that in my conscious mind I didn't quite know, but every time I grasped hands with each person, I knew all about them. I knew if they were good or if they were evil.
Well, what difference does it make? They're dead. They were dead, right?
No,
all of
them. No,
you just
not. I thought they were dead. They were not dead.
They weren't dead.
It is
so,
me.
It was you that...
I found out who the ghost was. I found out the person who had the death in them was me.
Oh, brother. Okay, so this was your death experience, huh?
No, I know that when I die, I know it is going to be on the street. I know the name of the street. And I know that when I die, I will go to that receiving line, and I will not be afraid.
All right, because, well, you know...
I mean, it was very real.
All right, yes, I've got that. All right, well, I guess in a sense that might qualify as time travel, but that's awfully loose. Now, what am I talking about when I'm talking about time travel? I'm talking about real time travel, which I suppose is laughable unto itself in a way, isn't it? Because we don't really know that time travel is real. I just strongly suspect that it is, very strongly, and we will encounter one. Her experience was interesting, though, wasn't it? What a surprise. You're going to meet dead people. Well, she must not have heard correctly, because it turns out she was the one that was dead, and that was her death, and she's going to go to a line when she dies. I can't even imagine that. Lines are bad enough in life, but now we're going to have to face them in death as well. I mean, somehow you feature this misty, never-ending line of people who've just died, you know, waiting for their processing or whatever. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is Joe listening on KLBJ, Austin, Texas.
Ah, yes, indeed. Welcome.
How are you doing?
Just spiffy.
Well, about a week or two before your back went out the last time,
yes,
I called and suggested that you get your family cane remote viewed.
And I did.
You did?
Oh, I most certainly did.
What were the results?
The results were very specific. In other words, well, the actual results were not specific in that it is not yet found. However, Ed Dames told me where the cane was. It was in a footlocker. And actually, it's entirely possible. We're looking for an aunt of mine who may have received a footlocker after my father's passing in which it is said that cane is contained. Now, we're searching for her now to have her look for exactly that. So there's no end result yet. In other words, we haven't reached her and we don't know. But it's very much pointing in that direction. And when I told my mother about the remote viewing, she said, oh, contact aunt. I won't give her name. And so that's the stage we're at now. We haven't found it yet because we haven't found her, but we're looking.
Well, it sounds like it may work.
You never know.
Did you know that your bumper stickers for your radio station are being sold on eBay?
Yes. Yes. And I thank you very much. I wish to address that, please. I would like to point out, my wife and I, you know, we have a cool thing going on here. You know, it's just in Pahrump, right? Little Pahrump. Really cool ones. KNYE bumper stickers. Things that go Pahrump in the night. Well, for some reason, these bumper stickers have become some sort of an item. Beyond all expectation. I think we have had, hon, if you would please come in here, she'll hear this 6 seconds later. If you'd come in here, tell me how many bumper stickers we've got out right now. We gave these to people in town, and, you know, they're all over the place. They're on everybody's car. It's incredible. We're glad they love the radio. How many? 17,000 bumper stickers. Thank you. 17,000 bumper stickers. And they really are cool. And unfortunately, they've become an item. And yes, this person is right. They are on eBay. Now, listen to me. You have no right to sell our bumper stickers on eBay. We don't want, it's not the idea, we didn't want these to become some sort of thing that people everywhere want. These were, you have to understand, for the listeners of KNYE Radio, but unfortunately it's totally, utterly out of control. People are sending the bumper stickers all over the world. They're on eBay. Oh God, what are we going to do? I have no idea. They are cool, but please, folks, understand, this is just a radio station bumper sticker. It's very cool, but it's meant for the people here in Pahrump. They should not be sold on eBay. They should not be, it's out of control. Totally out of control. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Yo, Michael.
Last night's guest, very interesting on one hand, but disappointing on another.
I would agree exactly with that sentiment. What he was discussing was so interesting.
Yeah.
But yet he was, I'm going to just say what I think. I think that he really wanted to say all this and explain it to us as his belief system, which would have been a much more interesting way to do it. Instead, he sort of presented a never-ending series of quotes from researchers and so forth to sort of lead us down that path without saying, here's what I believe.
Right, right.
That's kind of how it hit me.
Well, I thought you did a good job of turning him around on that. But the thing that I found disappointing, he didn't give any evidence that he took a scientific approach to examining the question of God's intervention in history.
Hmm.
And what he should have done is he should have, as a scientist, described what criteria he would have had in searching out that question.
And what about you? What criterion would you lay down to say, aha, the hand of God intervened here?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't start at the other end of the macrocosmic universal scale on the origin of the universe to do it. I would do as we do in science. We take the Einsteins of science, we key in on them, and we see what we can learn from them.
Yeah, but there's always this possibility of terrible error. I mean, hindsight is 20/20. As we look back at giant events in the world, it's very easy to say God intervened, you know, after Ronald Reagan said, tear down that wall, or any other major event in history. It's you know, 20/20 hindsight, right?
No. Here's my point. If we look at the methodology, for example, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Elijah, and Jesus Christ. Okay, you got five big ones. You got about the same thing on the scientific side. How do these men differ in their approach to God than the average theologian or professional preacher? Very, very different. They were in no sense professional theologians. And it's like asking an electrician to critique the Einstein's two theories of relativity.
All right, well, let me go back to where I was. What criterion would you lay down for saying, aha, the hand of God intervened here?
Well, first of all, you don't put the prover in the position of having to describe...
You're not answering my question. I asked you straight out, what criterion would you lay down for saying, aha, a case where God intervened? Straight question.
Well, I have to respond to your question. I was answering your question directly. You don't put anybody, including yourself, as you're trying to test this question... You don't put anybody in the position of having to, in any sense, describe what God is like. You do this. You say, first of all, were there superior human beings? Did they give evidence that there were superior beings above them? Not necessarily God, but
he alluded to that, the possibility of others having been our creators.
Pardon me?
He alluded to that, possibility of others having been our creators.
Well, okay, but you have to go up the scale. So if we have superior beings with superior knowledge and wisdom to human beings, they would be a key, they would be the first step to take towards finding out more about God. We find out what those superior beings say.
Now, all right, well, that's great if we get a chance to do it, but, you know, so far we haven't had any... a proof of a contact with alien beings or spirit beings of any kind, have we? Other than that which is, for example, contained in the Bible. And if you want to look for places where God intervened, there's plenty of them described in the Bible, if you want to believe that occurred. Otherwise, you still really did not answer my question about the criterion of knowing when he put his hand here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Dave in Nevada City, California.
Hello, Dave.
And I have the explanation for the DC on your ham radio antenna.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, I'm a ham, an electrical engineer, and I've been designing broadcast transmitters since 1975.
Uh-huh.
And the answer is in this month's issue of the Old Timers Bulletin. And that's the Journal of the Antique Wireless Association.
I'm well aware of it, yes.
Well, look on page 36, then.
I didn't say it was sitting right here. I said I'm well aware of the publication.
Yeah, sure.
So
anyway, basically there's a DC charge in the atmosphere of about 300 volts per meter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story in this magazine about the Alexanderson alternators at Haiku, Hawaii, mm-hmm. in World War II. And these were very low-frequency transmitters used for submarine communications, and they had some antennas that were very similar in some ways to your ham antenna. They had cables that were 2 miles long and
right.
2,200 feet high over the valley at the ends.
They also did it buried in the Midwest for subcommunications.
Yeah, that was
too,
at even lower frequencies than that.
That's right, yes.
This is at 16 kilohertz, and I believe that was down.
Yeah, but the ones you're talking about were in the air.
Yeah, they were up in the air.
Okay.
And as a result, there's the author mentions that the antenna had to be grounded for some repairs, and he was there when the knife switch was opened to remove the ground, and he observed 4-inch sparks that were drawn across the contacts.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is not trivial, and while what you're saying is absolutely true, I mean, it's undeniable, it's true, I'm experiencing it right here. What I want to know is, why hasn't this ever been pursued as a power source? Short of what Tesla might have been pointing us toward, what the hell went wrong that we just sort of dropped the ball on this and we make it as an observation? My God, look at all the voltage, but we haven't attempted to do anything with it.
Well, you're not going to get current.
Well, now wait. Be a little
it's
careful.
It's being delivered through a very high impedance.
Well,
so.
then you might like to explain to me how I can take one side of that antenna, whether it's off ground, slap it to ground, I get a big bang, just like you were talking about?
Yeah.
And then with a voltmeter connected to it, I observe that the rise time of the voltage is immediate. In other words, it doesn't slowly rise and build back up as in a static discharge with very low current. It's there immediately. And if I want to, I can sit there and go bang, 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 and discharge it that fast. Now, that wouldn't be the kind of static buildup that you're describing.
Well, in this particular antenna, they've got 200,000 volts.
Oh, my God.
And so during construction of this antenna system, it says they had to go to great pains to keep the thing grounded so people wouldn't get hurt. But, yeah, you can get some energy out of it, but not a huge amount.
Well, maybe that's because it hasn't been done on a scale that intentionally is looking for energy. I'm saying there's something here. And I think Nikola Tesla was on to it, and it just wasn't pursued. It's never been pursued. It's been regarded as more of a hassle, a bother, and something to get rid of than to be thought of as a possible energy source. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I think what you'd get out of it would be milliwatts, because it's being delivered through the high impedance of the air.
But science has got to be pursued. It's got to be pursued, and it never has been. I've got a break here. And I appreciate your call, and you're dead right. In some respects, you're dead right. But this has got to be pursued. It's what Nikola Tesla was working on, and it could be some kind of ultimate answer, should we decide to pursue it. Good morning, I'm Art Bell.
When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right. Ah, what a feeling! I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy. Taste is on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine. Got a bug from you, girl, but I don't need a cure. I just stay up again if I can for sure.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
Isn't it a wonderful world? And it continues to turn, and turning on it with you, all of you, are the people you're listening to tonight. Something you're going to want to bear very closely in mind as you travel around the spinning world. Anyway, good morning. The Time Traveler line is area code 775-727-1222. And I'm very serious about that. Only those that have traveled in time. If that's not you, just hang phone up and we'll give somebody who actually has traveled in time an opportunity to call. In the meantime, a quick break and then we're right back at it. You know, that commercial reminds me. Larry King owes me an interview. I went on Larry King's program for an hour, and then I made him promise that he would do an interview with me, which he never did. So, Larry, or Larry's handlers, who also, by the way, spewed out several promises in that regard, it's time to fulfill them. Now, one of these days, I'll be back filling in once again for George, no doubt, and I expect a call to the producers of this program from Larry King or his people agreeing to do an interview. Come on, Larry, it'll be fun. I'd just love to do a, love to interview Larry King, turn the tables around to interview Larry King. He's been quite something over the years, hasn't he? One of the very few, by the way, that has successfully made the transition from radio to television. Most talk show hosts who try TV fall flat on their faces, not Larry. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you, Art?
I'm pretty okay. Where are you?
I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia.
And your first name?
Kimberly.
Kimberly.
Yes.
All right, Kimberly, what's up?
Well, I think I told you when you answered the phone. I said, I'm a witch.
You're a witch.
Yes, I've been practicing Wicca for probably over 5 years now.
Aha, Wicca.
Yes.
The white witchcraft, right?
Well, personally, my belief in that is magic isn't the intent of the heart of the witch. It's neither white nor black. It's the intent in which you send it out.
Well, now, what kind of Wiccan are you? Most Wiccans, I do believe, think that there is no such thing as what I call a real broom-riding, cauldron-stirring witch. They don't think there's any such thing. Only Wicca.
Right. Well, I happen to be very open to all forms of witchcraft that are out there, although Wicca is the religion part of it. But, yeah. But I mean, I personally don't believe in casting harm on someone, but if it was deemed necessary, I could try to find a safe way to do it without harming too many people.
Including yourself.
Including myself, exactly. But the reason I was calling, you had a show on quite a while back when I first started listening to you about people who have this strange reaction when they get around electronic equipment. It seems to break down on them.
Yes.
And I noticed that happens to me usually after a ritual for about a week later.
Mm-hmm.
I screw up the computer. My watches don't work. The microwave goes on the fritz.
You're exactly the kind of person that I wouldn't let anywhere near my room.
It doesn't happen very often. Just usually, and the effect goes away for a while until I, you know, happen to generate enough energy.
I know, but being in the wrong place, wrong time, you could destroy thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars of electronic equipment just like that.
Yeah, well, it's freaky when it happens to me because it actually drains me to the point where I get sick, usually. Because I've given so much back that, you know, in terms of what I've put out, it's just, okay,
so you
can have it back.
You're a Pentium killer.
Yeah, I try not to be, but I can't help it. These things happen. I just, like, after when I go meet my friends,
yeah.
Afterwards, after a, you know.
Are they still your friends?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
They have a very hard time I generate so much energy, it's kind of like I'm walking around with this aura about 10 feet around me.
pop light bulbs, that kind of thing?
No, just it's mainly, you know, I can't wear watches on my wrist. I can wear them around my neck and they're fine, but I can't wear watches on my wrist. I can't be near the stereo.
Uh-huh.
It makes the radio stations jump.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what to say to you except stay the heck away from me. I just dearly love all my electronics, and to see somebody walk into the room and then snap, crackle, and pop, that'd be heartbreaking for everybody concerned. Anybody else out there with that kind of an aura? There really are people like that, you know. There really are people like that. They break things. They really do break things. That's not a joke. They seem to have some effect on electronic circuitry. And I don't have the faintest clue what it could be, but I know that it is true. These people get around things that otherwise work well. But give them a couple of minutes in the area of your DVD, and that's all she wrote. On my time traveler line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, yes. My father died several years ago, and he used to take these 8mm movies. And as you know, the 8mm movies you could look at just by hand. You could see each little frame.
Oh, sure. You could pull it, and just, I did a lot of that, and just look at each single frame. That's right. Yeah.
Lovely. So what he did was he took these 25-foot reels, and then he spliced them together to make a 400-foot reel. Now, the last 25-foot reel that he took, I did not open. For some reason, I didn't open that for about 20 years. I don't know why, but I just didn't. When I finally opened it up, and I tried to squint to see the little pictures and see who was in it,
yes,
all of a sudden, I felt a change in my mental state. I felt that I was myself from the 1960s visiting in the 1990s.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Because there's something called a flicker rate. I don't even know if I can get this all out correctly, but there's something about looking at a certain flicker rate that affects the human brain frequently. And so there is something to what you're saying. And so you're saying as you began to run these frames past you, you began to move into them, sort of, be a way
well,
to say it, I guess, huh?
Yeah, my mind, I felt I was myself in the 1960s visiting the 1990s. But it wasn't flickering. It was just in my hand. I was just looking at each frame.
Well, you were producing a flicker rate, you see.
Yeah.
You actually were, believe me.
Yeah, I was. But the thing is that afterwards, I have tried to do this again, and it has not worked.
It hasn't worked. How, at the time that it did occur, how real did everything seem? How affected were you? I mean, were you totally immersed in this time? Were you actually there? Were you catching little flickers and flashes of it, or were you there? How far to go?
No, I felt that I was visiting. It was like I was visiting another city, but I was visiting another time.
I've got that, but what I mean is your senses, the things you saw, the things you felt, you heard that were all around you, were you really there, or was it just sort of a little sense of it, or, you know, I'm trying to get an idea of the scale of...
No, I was in the 1990s. I was aware that I was in the 1990s, but for myself, in other words, any knowledge that I had gained, like I'd studied stenotype in the 1960s, now I know it. But had anybody asked me to do it, I don't think I'd be able to do it, at least immediately. My mindset was in the 1960s. And I was aware that I had temporarily become myself in the 1960s. I was aware of this.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? I actually remember those little 25-footers, and I remember splicing them together. So, yeah, I remember all of that.
Yeah, they were great. The thing is that I've tried this again. It hasn't worked. And my theory is that the atmosphere, since this package has been closed for 20 years, the little puff of atmosphere, of air in that, may have just entered my nostrils. So I think that if you, like, go into an Egyptian tomb without the idea of getting treasure, but simply going back in time, If you collect the air from that, bring it back and have somebody just breathe in that air.
You really think that could do it, huh?
I don't know.
All right, well, you know, all right, thank you. That's a very, very interesting story. Now, I don't know about your theory of it being a little bit of trapped air from that time, but I think I would personally lean more toward the whole concept of you're reeling that in front of your eyes, that old 8mm stuff where you could look at it frame by frame and where you could produce a certain flicker rate. I'm not trying to dictate your experience. I'm just saying that as you unwound that and looked at it, you produced a certain flicker rate. So it could, another good theory, would be that when you reached a certain flicker rate, as you unfolded this film, something happened. And you were taken to that time. You were, in essence, actually there for a moment. You opened it up a little bit. That could be. Easy as your theory, anyway. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Is this a first-time caller?
No, it isn't. It's a wildcard line.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's all right. I mean, you're on the air.
I'm a first-time caller, and I've been waiting, so...
Well,
here
you are. You're on the air, so now's the time.
Okay, well, I want to address the question that you posted to the guest that was on last night. You asked him, did time exist before the Big Bang?
Right.
Assuming there was a Big Bang.
Right.
And I think we can answer that by, using inductive and deductive logic. If you imagine pure empty space... in a vacuum, the kind that you'd find like in your TV set, the tube of it. And if you add now the element of time, this space will start to curve. And before it reaches the point of infinite curvature, it will start to break up like foam. This occurs around 10 to the minus 31st power.
Yes, but wait. In empty space, if we are to imagine before there was anything, before God or whoever they were produced this Big Bang, there's only space. There's no objects.
Right.
Therefore, there is no ability for man or alien or anybody to measure time. So there couldn't really be time. The only way you could have time is if you have at least two objects that are moving with respect and relationship to each other. So you could measure that movement and say, aha. Time passes. Things change.
Well, see, you're absolutely right. But now we're just going to assume that the element of time exists. And if we do allow this, then that space will start to curve. And it'll start to curve in on itself before it reaches the point of infinite curvature. It will start breaking up.
You're talking about space?
Yes, pure empty space,
pure
like
empty
in
space.
A vacuum.
This See, I can't. I just can't wrap my head around that. Pure empty space. How can pure empty space be doing anything prior to a creation? Pure empty space is just that. It can't wind around anything. It's empty.
That's right, but we can observe that in our own universe, that space does curve. And when it does curve...
I know, sir, but that's a universe filled with things like planets and suns and, all the objects that we have seen in space. So there are things there. Now we can see that curvature that you're talking about, but how can you postulate it was there prior to the existence of anything material?
Okay, now we're just going, just for a second now, let's assume that it was that way, that it was totally empty, it did start to curve, and when it reached this point of infinite curvature, it started breaking up as foam. This is called multiplying interconnectedness. That's what Albert Einstein called it. And each one of those little points is coming into existence and disappearing randomly.
Huh.
And each one of those points is connected to the other point. On this side of the universe and on the other side of the universe, what happens to one point will happen to the other.
Uh-huh.
Now, we've got to assume this, but if we do assume it, we can explain how matter came into existence, because each of these little points are points of energy. I know we had to, you know, take, you know, a giant leap of faith there.
Yeah. It's the same giant leap of faith that you have to take regarding the Big Bang. You're just simply requiring us to take the leap at a different point. That's all. You're sort of pushing forward this theory about empty space being responsible for the creation of matter. But still, when it gets to that instant, you're making us take the giant leap of faith that's just as hard to take, frankly, with regard to the Big Bang. The whole, it came out of something smaller than a quark. Everything that now is, that you can see all the stars, all the planets, is just every bit as big of a leap of faith your way as it is the old Big Bang way. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, it's me.
Okay. Yeah, you indeed, yes.
I'm a first-time caller, and I'm not a time traveler, so I couldn't call on the first-time caller line. But I'm listening to you on AM 800 in Windsor, Ontario.
Oh, yes, of course.
But I'm in Port Huron.
Okay.
A little bit farther north. I just had a comment about, man, a question about your antenna.
Okay.
I think I heard something on some cable channel years ago about this gentleman who had refurbished an old mill. He had a water wheel, and he was producing energy.
Yes.
And he said, and I haven't been able to get online and verify it. I wasn't that interested. But he said something that it was federal law that the local utility company had to buy that energy from him.
That is correct, yeah. Well, I don't know about federal law. In some states, it is law, like in California, for example, and even in other places. But there's small print, and what they don't tell you is that in a lot of places, like the one I live in, for example, yes, they have to, by law, buy it back from you.
Yeah.
But, and it's a big but, they will only buy it at wholesale rates. They'll sell to me at retail, but they expect me to sell to them at wholesale.
Well, he thought it was really cool that instead of him sending the utility company a check every month, they sent him one.
Well, yeah, well, it can be done. It can be done. But again, I actually went down there and talked to him. They said, oh, you've got to put in another meter, and we'll only buy from you at wholesale rates, big discount rates. And on the other hand, if you need it, we'll sell it to you at retail. And I thought, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, they're probably not producing much to make it worthwhile to install the equipment and everything either.
No, but there would be certainly incredible joy, wouldn't there, in watching a meter run backwards.
Yes, yes, it would. And maybe getting a little teeny-weeny check from the utility company instead of sending them a huge
instead
one.
Instead of a bill, you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, that's all I had to say. I won't monopolize the time.
All right, thank you very much. Take care. Yes, I generate electricity here, and so I actually went and I checked into it. And believe me, that is the deal. Now, in California, I'm told it's a little different. And in California, they'd probably have to pay you what you pay them, which seems to me to be fair. Or maybe I've got it all wrong. Maybe as a supplier of electricity, it's only fair that they don't have to pay from their point of view. I'm sure they don't have to pay me more than they pay other suppliers of electricity. But perhaps to them, that would seem unfair. From my point of view, I ought to be able to sell it at the same rate I buy it for. But I don't know. It's one of those things. We really don't have time to take another call. I want to remind you that our time traveler line is open for those of you who have actually traveled in time. The Real McCoy at area code 775-727-1222. That's the number, 775-727-1222, if you have traveled in time. In the meantime, we'll break here at the top of the hour and come back and continue with all of this. Open lines. Otherwise, anything you want to talk about, fair game on any other line. Just that one single line. Hold it open, folks, for those who have actually traveled the halls of time. And come back.
coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
That's such a nice, mellow song, isn't it? Good morning, everybody. This is Coast to Coast AM on a Friday night, Saturday morning. Open lines with all of them, with the exception of the time travel line. Time travelers only at area code 775-727-1222. All other lines are good for whatever it is you'd like to talk about. Sort of a tradition here on Friday night, Saturday mornings, and we'll get right back to it. Back into the night we go. Good morning. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, for George Norrie, and you're on the time traveler line, which means that you must be a time traveler. Right?
This is true. Yep.
It is true, huh? All right. What shall we call you?
My name is Cross. I'm listening on KSTP in Minnesota.
You Cross, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, Cross. You've traveled in time. In what manner, please?
Actually, I was taken there by another individual. His name is Malachi.
Malachi?
Yes.
Okay. When did this occur and to where did you go?
Actually, it's happened on multiple occasions. The first time I went to the year 2045.
Now, there's a very good year because that's within reach. I mean, almost all of us alive today, or no, many of us alive today, will live to see that year. I may not. But we'd certainly have a natural curiosity about the year 2045, not that far in the future. What lies ahead? Can you give us any hint? What did you see?
It's actually more of a, I guess you could say, a medieval or tribal setting. There is no technology. It's more of an inner peace kind of atmosphere. People are on a one-on-one basis with each other, almost more on a telepathic level than actually through technology of cell phones or computers. In fact, there is no technology to be found. It's almost a...
He says into his cell phone.
Yep, no more cell phones. Thank God.
Well, the future's brighter already. you're saying that human beings begin to evolve into telepathic, spiritual creatures, and we begin to drop all the trappings of technology. Is that it?
That is correct.
Hmm.
And I believe, from my understanding of the experience and visually seeing what was going on, it's all brought about by, in a sense, a higher being from somewhere. I don't know if it's a religious entity or if it's a spiritual entity or if it's a outer space type entity or whatnot, but something comes to Earth and has touched these individuals in the future and has taught them the old age capabilities, I guess, in a sense that all humans have and how to reuse them that they haven't used in a long time. And at the point in 2045, it's almost already... has been for a good 5-6 years, so it's almost evolved to a point where it's natural occurrence, and that's why the technology is washed away and the lack of need for the modern-day need of communication.
There goes the NASDAQ again. Interesting. And so then you saw people walking around serenely in a state of contemplative communication with each other, and it was a totally different world than we have today. But you're not quite sure what got us there, whether it was alien intervention, God's hand coming down and changing everything, or evolution, or just what, huh?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And then a major event between now and 2045 that will modify, and you know, that's kind of interesting in a lot of ways, because there are a number of remote viewers who have suggested that they have this barrier where some major event, and some have even suggested of biblical proportions will occur that will modify humanity in such a way that it's so unrecognizable that they actually can't read what's going on. So that's the sort of thing that he alluded to right there. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This
Hello.
Is Barbara, listening to you on KNYE in Pahrump. How about that,
All
huh?
right for you, Barbara. Hey.
Hey, I can't believe I got through.
Well, here you are.
I wanted to talk to you. I wanted your opinion, actually, on shadow people and animals, and if you think that animals are cognizant to shadow people.
Oh, I certainly do.
Because, well, I know you and Ramona are really animal lovers and all that, but...
Well, no, it's obvious. Cats see shadow beings, whatever they are, cats see them. There's no question about it. Cats see them.
Because I work at a horse ranch, and we've got a tree farm that's adjacent to us, and, you know, I kept catching these glimpses of things out of the corner of my eye,
uh-huh.
and I thought, whatever, I've been in this desert sun too long. And, you know, I just blew it off.
Well, there is that possibility, Barbara.
I know, believe me, especially lately.
Yeah.
But one day, it was just really weird, because we had a bunch of horses in the pasture, and it just caught my eye, because everybody was looking in the same direction, just staring. Usually, obviously, that means they're seeing something.
Yes.
And this was one day where I turned, I looked, and it was just clear as a bell. This person, guy, girl, whatever, in a long, dark, almost like those dusters, and a hat, and just walking along the tree line, and then just turned, walked into the tree line, and boom, gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was the strangest thing. It just sent chills up my spine.
Well, Barbara, thank you. It's really cool that you saw one of them. I never for one second a doubt in my mind that animals see these beings. I don't for one second doubt that whatever in the heck they are there, these shadow beings. And if you don't know what a shadow being is, it's a creature or an entity or something that we're all able to see at times, perhaps only fleetingly from the corner of our eyes, almost as a flicker. In fact, some have suggested that looking at monitors and slaving in front of a computer every day, you're subjected to a certain flicker rate by that monitor. You can actually check the operating system, see what it is that you're getting. And that will eventually morph human beings' ability to see at a different rate. And by that I mean that these creatures, these entities, are at a slightly different vibrational rate. So when you get adjusted by a flicker to a different rate yourself, you begin to see these things sort of out of the corner of your eye. Quick movements that you sort of shake your head and say, no, there's nothing really there. It was just, you know, sort of a... No, it wasn't. You really saw something. And I think that animals, cats in particular, and perhaps dogs and even horses, Barbara, see these things as well. And then one day you were lucky enough or unlucky enough, depending on your point of view, to see one yourself. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi.
This is Ed calling from Toledo.
Yes, Ed.
Albert Einstein proposed that time and space are closely related.
Uh-huh.
And as we hurtle through the universe, in our galaxy, we're constantly moving through the galaxy.
Indeed so.
The Earth is moving within our galaxy.
It's moving right along, sir, yes.
And I think I would propose that we're all time travelers as we move along on the Earth.
Well, in the broadest sense we are. Yes.
Yes,
but I'm talking very specifically about the ability to actually... traverse time forward or
I'm thinking forward, maybe as we as humans on the Earth move on the Earth, at times we're moving in opposition to all these natural movements in the universe, and I think there's a universal time, and as we move on the Earth in opposition to this natural movement, I think we get out of sync with time. And we have all experienced deja vu. And I believe at some point we get to a point where we've moved enough in opposition that we're out of sync with that universal time. And therefore, we experience deja vu. And so we don't get all out of whack. At some point, we have to come back. And so we experience deja vu, and we're back into whack with universal time. So I think we're all time travelers at one point or another.
All right. Well, I don't know if I agree with that. Deja vu is just the sense that you have been somewhere or done something previously, right? And that's winding a pretty intricate theory around that feeling, which could come from anything. It could be very meaningful or not meaningful at all. It could be just our little neurons firing in a specific way, and you go, you know, like, wow, I've been in this room or something. It could be simply a sort of a little misfire of a couple of neurons, or it could be something very profound. I don't know. But that's jumping to quite an elaborate theory regarding the deja vu experience. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
All right, it's Joe in Tucson.
Hello, Joe.
Hi, I'm not a time traveler, but I am an astronomer.
Okay.
And, I'm calling, I want to say that one of the fond moments I remember on your shows in the past was when a time traveler, a self-proclaimed time traveler called
yes,
you
yes.
and addressed you as Senator. He addressed you as Senator Bell. I was rolling in laughter at that. It was great.
I was, too.
I loved it.
That's about the least likely thing to ever happen to me.
It sounded appropriate, though. It fits you.
No, it doesn't. You know, I am intrigued but more repulsed by politics. So it's an unlikely thing to occur.
I like the very respectable sound of it. That's the way
and
you feel
about if it,
it
does occur, then time is one mean mistress indeed, I'll tell you. Because I don't like the whole process of politics.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the Vatican Observatory.
Oh, yes.
That's really why I'm calling.
It's all right.
You know, George, the past couple of weeks has raised some interesting questions about it.
Good. Good.
And I don't think he's gotten a full answer. He was perplexed as to why the church would, in fact, have an observatory.
Well, what, pray tell, do you think the Catholics are up there looking for?
Oh, I have a pretty good idea. I know a number of the Vatican astronomers personally and have known some of them since, 1982.
But even the Vatican astronomers, in quotes here,
yes,
might not know what they're looking for. I mean, the Vatican, at the Vatican, they have in mind something very specific. What do you suppose that might be?
Well, first of all, we have to start where your dear friend Malachi Martin began, which was that he talked about the Jesuits and how they are in the church the most scholarly and the most intellectual order of all the priests, okay?
Yeah.
They do study academic subjects very intently, and they do really groundbreaking research in the field, just as other workers in, secular, non-religious workers do in the field. And that stretches all the way from medicine, practical fields, even engineering, and even astronomy, basic research in astronomy and astrophysics.
What do you think the Catholics are looking for, sir?
They're just trying to advance that field, just as they're trying to advance and make headway in any other of the academic fields that they go into.
Well, if they were to see something that was obvious through that wonderful telescope they have in Arizona where the air is thin and observing is great.
Yes.
And they saw something that really just put a kibosh on perhaps something they've been teaching from Rome all these years. What do you think they do with that info?
Well, you know, I think they would publish, just as they publish everything else that they study. But I tell you what, Art, that telescope, although it's a very advanced telescope and has beautiful, wonderful detectors on it, it's on Mount Graham,
yes,
in Arizona, by the way,
10,300
feet altitude.
Indeed.
Very dry. The point is, see, that telescope is only a 6-foot telescope, 72 inches. It's really dwarfed by other telescopes that are, in even better locations.
Oh, there's lots
Hawaii,
of big telescopes.
Chile. But it's a substantial telescope, and the fact that they have it to themselves means that they can use it every single night.
And look in exactly the direction and what they can look and try and find what it is they're looking at. The question is, what are they looking for, sir?
Oh, the whole works. That is, everything from every specialty beginning at galaxy studies, elementary studies of stellar evolution, that is, you know, the lifetime, the life cycle of normal stars, supernovae, even planetary work.
And what do you think they want to know?
Oh, you know, I mean, I think it's one of the Psalms says that the heavens declare the glory of God. And so they're taking that seriously.
Oh, I bet they are. And I, you know, I bet they're looking for something that certainly has to do with God or has to do with
the whole
concept of a maker, the whole concept, or perhaps even the search for those that might have made us. I mean, no telling what the Catholics might see from Mount Graham.
It's fundamental research, basic research in science. And, of course, that gives insight into the world and insight into all of creation. That's really what they're up to. There's nothing hidden, I believe, and there's nothing that is...
I'm curious, then, you know, have you ever heard of the catacombs?
See, I've worked side by side.
Have you heard of the catacombs?
Of course.
You have.
Yeah.
You know, there are these great secret chambers that man that you talked about, Malachi Martin, mentioned, that are beneath. Secrets are held and kept for generation after generation after generation. Now, that doesn't sound too open to me.
Well,
Just casually looking at it. I mean, they're secrets, sir.
Maybe it amounts to something like skeletons in the closet, because I understand there are bones in those catacombs.
Yeah, well, maybe there's bones in the air, too, you know, or in space. What I'm getting at is, I don't necessarily accept that what you are suggesting, that the Catholics are looking for what everybody else is looking for on Mount Graham. I think they're looking for something very special, something perhaps secretive. Are they known to keep secrets? Yes, they're in the catacombs. We know about that. So they're looking for something they haven't told us about, and it's pretty intriguing to imagine what that might be. Do I think it's as casual as any astronomer's observation of the heavens? No, I think that the Vatican is driven by something specific. Now, I don't claim to know what that is, or even have a hint, but I think there's more to it than meets the eyepiece. First time caller line, time travel line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm from New Jersey.
Steve, turn your radio off, please.
Oh, beg your pardon.
Very important thing to do when you call. We have a time delay here. So.
Sorry about that.
All right, Steve, are you a time traveler?
Yes, I am, indeed. I've been travel in time and in space as well.
Oh?
I had the first experience when I was, I think, about 19 years old. I was playing in a band, and I loved auto racing. And suddenly I saw the auto race before it happened.
Really?
And I saw a crash. And it was a mortal wound to the driver, and I called my mom.
Okay, this would be more commonly referred to as precognition. You saw something that was about to happen. I suppose in a sense that's time travel, isn't it? Precognition. I had one experience like that only. And so you made a call.
Yes, I told mom, and so I said, let me know what happens, because I saw something very frightening. And indeed, everything I saw was what happened about 2 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as spatial is concerned, I'm one of those people that every time you have a guest on, I've had almost every experience that most of your guests have. It's just been like that my whole life since I was a small kid.
Well, I've been on the air a long time, had a lot of guests. That would mean that you are a very experienced person indeed.
Well, I'm not bragging about it neither, and I'm not saying that it's done me any good either. But I have been inside spacecraft. I have traveled through time. I'd be on your show if I wrote a book. I just never wrote a book.
What kind of spacecraft have you been in?
Well, this went back to the mid-'80s, and I don't know if you have time for the story, but I'll make it as quick as I can.
Well, actually, you hold on, all right?
Okay, yes.
We'll make time for your story. I wonder if that has to do with time travel. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
Once again, I appear to be here. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Good morning. We're in the middle of open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Time travel line is off by itself, though. Only time travelers at 775-727-1222. Otherwise, it's open country. We'll be right back. Welcome back, creatures of the night. First time call, actually, time traveler line, but we were talking about a ship here, weren't we? You're back on the air again. We were talking about a ship. You were saying something about being on a ship, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Where and when? How? Why?
Well, okay. It started in the mid-80s when I started meeting a bunch of people who told me that I glow. For whatever reason.
You glow.
They tell me I glow.
Really? Have you observed this glow yourself? I mean, can you...
No, I did not.
Okay.
But the first person told me was a very religious person, and they told me that it meant that I was surrounded by God. This was in Princeton, New Jersey. The second person said it to me was in a place called Oates, South Carolina, where I went to Darlington to see an auto race.
You were telling me you were on a ship. To that part.
Well, you want to get ready to that part?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, I met some people who told me that they were people that receive writings, and they received a writing from space people for me.
Automatic writings? That kind of
yes.
Thing, yeah.
And they read it to me, and it sounded more like me than me.
You know, I've always been terribly suspicious of this kind of thing. It's like when people go into trances. I mean, automatic writing for you. I could go into a trance and write stuff down for you, too. I don't know. I'm suspicious of it. It's like...
Well, you're no more suspicious than I was, believe me. Okay. I thought I was getting hooked into some kind of weirdo group.
Well, yeah.
I'm not a far-out character, you know?
Yeah.
At any rate... They told me that these people have been in communication with me since I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me if I had any recollection of anything like that, and I told them that I used to go out at night, in the middle of the night, and just stare at the stars when I was a little boy. And I would see myself traveling amongst the stars,
mm-hmm.
and the girl looked at me and said, "Your dream is going to come true."
Mm-hmm.
And when she looked at me and said that, her eyes got five times as big as they were before, and there was this green color like a cat's eye. And at the moment I saw those eyes, she said to me, "If you could only see your eyes right now, you would understand."
Betty Davis eyes.
I know about that. But anyway.
Great big eyes.
They took me out and asked me if I was interested, and of course I was. And they took me out in the middle of the night into fields with the cameras, and they put a camera on my chest, and they said, "We don't care what you see, but if you feel like you feel anything, snap some pictures." And
generous offer.
They developed those pictures the next day,
yes.
And there were streaks across the stars that were not stars.
What happened to these photographs?
Excuse me?
The photographs. What happened to them?
They still have them.
They have them. You don't.
As far as I don't know, I never did get them.
Well, that doesn't seem fair. They've got you taking the pictures, and then they keep pictures. That's not fair.
Well, maybe so, but at the time it didn't seem to matter.
Mm.
And finally, I was going down. I'm going to zip through some time here. They told me to go to a park, and I went to this involved, and this was a girl that was this girl with the green eyes. And I told her that she had to stay away from me because I couldn't focus on anything when she was around because she gave me the willies, frankly. So I went out one night by myself without these people to see what would happen if I went by myself, and I took another friend with me.
And? Very quickly.
And right in the middle of the field, I was standing there, and I saw a little green ball about the size of a baseball. And it started to enlarge until it got about 3 feet wide. And then as it settled down to the ground, there was this woman in her living flesh, the girl with the green eyes.
Betty Davis, yeah.
Betty Davis, yeah. So I went home, and I called this person on the phone, and I said, "Where were you just now?" And she says, "You know darn well where I was."
And that was your trip on the ship?
No, this, I didn't get that far yet.
Well, we don't have any more time. So, I mean, you've taken us there as far as you can get us in this call, I'm afraid. I guess the ship trip will have to wait. Betty Davis eyes. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi, this is John in Texas.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir. I wonder if you could shed a little light on a, I don't know what you'd call it, an anomaly or a phenomena. But my wife and I were flipping through the channels a couple of years ago, and we caught the tail end of a story of a man who was bereaved, or whatever you call it. He had lost his daughter, and mm-hmm. I believe he was in Belgium or the Netherlands. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
the story went that he was a filmographer or something like that, and he went through a bunch of footage and frame by frame and. Found some anomalies. Okay, that's all that I remember hearing from that show. But anyway, we got a new video camera about 6 months later, and we decided to do this experiment. Hey, let's try this, what this man was talking about, see if there's any validity to it. So what we did, we took a regular video camera and filmed directly into a blue screen or the blank screen. It was the blue screen, blue blank screen on the television.
Mm-hmm.
And when we directed the video camera, the closer you got to the center, you just started to center the camera and look through the viewfinder, you're recording,
mm-hmm.
into the blank screen.
Mm-hmm.
And as you focus to the center of the screen, once you get to that point, it creates an incredible vortex effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just starts to swirl. And swirl into, it's mm-hmm. almost like you get the effect of it's some kind of infinite loop, because if you put your hand in front of it,
some kind of infinite loop. It is an infinite loop. You're looking down the hallways of infinity. If you had the resolution to display it, you would in fact see probably, you know, what you would see is a very good question.
Well, Mr. Bell, I happened, I'm almost finished here. What I did was, I happen to have a Macintosh, a computer with some software, and I was able to put the film. Now, it was very tedious, and
some people claim Macintosh is a computer.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what you were focusing into.
Yeah. It was very tedious to go frame by frame. I filmed about 2 hours of this into this blank screen.
Yes.
Yeah, and we went frame by frame, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just ghastly boring. This is ridiculous. Well, I just so happened to come across some strange imagery, and I collected these pictures or what looked like forms and figures,
mm-hmm.
and I put them in the computer and brought up the resolution.
Yes.
And the one that I kept was a very distinct outline of a 40s, it looks like a 40s portrait. Kind of looking up like a Greta Garbo.
Oh, God, that is fascinating. That
I have the picture on
my
hard
drive. That was going to be my next question.
Yes, and I've held it now. I've had that for about for several, it's been about a couple years now. Time's flying, but
I still have that on my hard drive.
Well, you're standing the hair on the back of my neck up just fine right now, because that's exactly what I think. I really, honest to God, I think that we're living in this oscillation, and when you did what you did, I think there's every possibility that you tapped in at some point along these swirling hallways that we both know are there. You tapped into something, and if you grabbed something from it, then I'd really like to see it. If you've really got a photograph,
oh, I do.
Let's rock. ArtBell@Mindspring.com. That's how to get to me. That's my email address. ArtBell@Mindspring.com. And you need to put something in the header so I'll know what it is. What are you going to write in the header?
What would I call it? Something to do with a recording woman from another time.
Just put. I'll tell you what. Just put recording past in the header.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to look for that, and I will find a way. I can assure you to get it to the website. This is really intriguing to me. As I described earlier in the show, all of these deep questions that we ponder. How it all began, whether there was a Big Bang, whether it's a steady state or expanding or contracting universe, who knows? But I think there's every possibility it may be, in essence, never ending. And that process can definitely, an oscillation, that process can be proven. You can prove it to yourself. You've just got to imagine you have endless definition by pointing a camera connected to a computer or connected to a monitor at, you know, just point the camera at the monitor and look at the swirling, changing. Of course, as you move, it will change and swirl. But it, in essence, it's looking into infinity. It's a feedback loop. Now, if he really toyed with that for an extended number of hours and really grabbed a picture from, I don't know, the 1930s or 40s or something like that, then he might really have done it. He might really have done it. He might have grabbed a little bit of the past. And maybe that's a way to do it. And that's a pretty exciting thought. When you mull it over a little bit, pretty exciting. That in those swirls, if you're able to stop and pluck a little bit of something from it, you might come up with essentially a portrait of the past right there. Wouldn't that be something for our ghost GIS-type people to investigate? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello?
Yeah.
Hi there.
How you doing there, Art?
All right, what is your first name?
My first name is Dan, and I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right, Dan.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to talk to you there,
and
Art.
And you, what's up?
I am currently possessed by a demonic entity. It's plaguing my life. And have you ever heard of Adolfo de Jesus Costanzo? He was a cult leader during the 1980s.
No, I honestly cannot say I...
Okay, well, this doesn't really have to do with him. It more has to do with his religion and things of that nature. It was a Caribbean, African-type spiritual, you know, thing like that. And about 2 years ago, I worked in a Spanish-speaking, like, bodega, like a corner store
yes.
here in Philadelphia, you know, real urban setting
sure.
you know, type.
Sure.
And, it's a cult, and there's two sides to this cult, and, you know, one good and one evil, and he worked for the good side of the cult, and, one time he paid me some money, you know, I worked for him, and never doing anything, you know, of that nature, you know, normal things around the store, excuse me, and he paid me some money to help reverse a spell on a person who had... you know, been in some bad luck situations, a lot of misfortune, and, you know, to help get them out. And I had to basically, you know, pour this powder on a step of a rival padrino, which means godfather in Spanish. And what they do is, you know, they cast spells and they do things like that.
That's not like putting down a banana peel for your rival to slip on and break his neck.
Well, no, this was a powder that was purchased for, like, a very high price.
The United States government is very suspicious of white powder these days. You know?
Well, you know, this is an anthrax or anything like that. I don't know, actually, but...
See, there you are.
Oh, you know, yeah. So, I put the powder on the steps or whatever. You know, I did my part for my share of the money that he gave me. And after this, you know, everything was okay. You know, we went back to the store we were currently working at. Like I said, this was his rival that owned another store of a bodega. And we come back to his store, and we have to sacrifice a chicken.
We'll see right there.
Well, exactly. You know, and I'm a Christian. So, you know, to me, this was bad.
Yeah.
You know, I should not have been doing things of
right.
this nature.
Right.
So, you know, and I didn't really, you know, sacrifice. I held the chicken for him. You know?
Right.
And this is a little off-brand. It
makes you, then you makes it part, you're part of it then. You
yeah.
held the chicken.
Well, you know, a little bit later, you know, a couple of days, maybe a week, I was walking to the store to open. That morning, I was ready to open the store. You know, I had keys and everything like that. And before me, I saw a very dark, demonic, dark,
yep.
draped in a dark robe. You know, very, very penetrating eyes. You know, something you don't want to look at. And it led me to the store. I knew my way to the store. You know, I worked there every day. It led me to the store. You know, kind of, you know, telling me to go there. And then it pointed to this heavy, heavy rock, you know, on the ground, and I blanked out. And when I woke up, the Padrino, the guy I worked for, was waking me up off of the ground and was pointing to the store, and the window was broken. Everything inside the store, glass, was broke. Everything, it was demolished, you know, it was the places where the sodas were kept, you know, things like that were all broke.
Something really big had happened.
Something, exactly.
Yes.
And he knew what had happened. Like, you know, he wouldn't explain to me what it was or anything like that, but he knew that I had done this. It's just it wasn't me. Something had possessed me to do this. And from that day on, you know, after he actually tried to take it away from me, showering me in blood of associated animals with the religion, and it didn't work. You know, he's tried many other things since then, and it hasn't worked. So the main reason I called
you
was
are possessed by an evil entity of some sort, and you are doing
things to other not just him, but to every Padrino that's locally around this area that is on the good side of this religion. I know that it's me, but it's not me. That there's been robberies.
You know, that sounds like the beginning of a legal defense to me. It's me, but it's not me.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but Art, when I tell you this, I mean this wholeheartedly.
You can tell Art Bell this, but you
exactly.
You know, when you tell the detectives this, you're going to have a
I haven't
trouble.
Been arrested.
I understand.
And the thing is, I'm pleading. I mean, there's many, many, many listeners to your show, and I'm asking if there's anybody out there
who could lift this,
who could help me shed light on this situation at all, to please come forth with something, because he has no answer for me. He has done what he has done, and it has not gone away. I've been plagued by this thing; it will not go away. And
you held the damn chicken.
I held the chicken.
It sounds like opening the door, brother.
And I poured the powder on the steps.
That's right.
I got myself into it. Art, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I don't want to take up too much time, and I just think you have a great show, and I'm sorry you're not on every night, and George is great.
Good luck to you.
All right, thank you very much, Art.
You take care, and if there's anybody who can lift this horrid curse from this man who's doing things that he's going to have a very hard time explaining, then come forth. But it sounds to me like you invited in your own fate, sir. Chicken legs. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
The Vatican is looking for wormwood. It's defined as a star in the Book of Revelation. It is one of the seven trumpets. It's the third one. And
I'm very well aware of wormwood
okay.
and what it will do and the poisoning of our waters
Correct.
And our lands. Yes.
Correct.
Well, you see, now you're probably onto it. But the other fellow was kind of trying to sell us a story that, you know, the Vatican's no different than any other astronomer, and they're just sort of looking to see what's out there. Hogwash.
No. They're and not only that, but they have no nothing against aliens from other planets. They have no position on that one way or the other. They wouldn't have any reason to be afraid of that. If God could create this, he could create somebody else.
Unless there became evidence that the others, that not only are we not alone, but that the others, rather than the traditional God of the Bible, are our creators. Now, that would be a significant problem for them.
Well, they wouldn't find that with a telescope.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. But a race that sufficiently advanced to be able to travel in that manner or communicate in that manner probably would be capable of creation because, dear, we're not that far from that ability ourselves right now. So that would be a pretty big shock to the religious world, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm sure it would, but
So would Wormwood.
Yeah.
All right, I think you're dead on, Wormwood. Dead on in more ways than one, that which will poison so much of the world. Yeah, that's probably what they're looking for. Well, it's open lines, folks. Anything goes from the high desert in the middle of the night. I'm Art Bell.
Coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
Top of the morning. George is probably enjoying the tender care of a Swedish masseuse's loving hands or something at the moment. I don't know, taking a couple of deserved days off, that's for sure, anyway. I hope he's having a great time. He certainly deserves them. This is quite an operation to do on a nightly basis. Anyway, great to be here, and in a moment we'll plunge right back into the night. Stay right there. Into the night. Hi there, on the time traveler line, you're on the air.
Hi Art, how are you today?
I'm all right. Where are you, sir?
I'd rather not say, if that's okay.
All right. No, that's perfectly fine. We allow anonymity here. You're calling this line for obvious reasons. You believe you've traveled in time.
Oh, I know I've traveled in time.
That's the attitude.
And I've traveled back in time, exactly. I'll try to keep it short.
All right. You've traveled back in time to this time, or you've traveled from this time back?
From this time to some type of start of creation. I'm not sure. But what had happened is a doctor had bought a home. He was his name is Dr. I don't know if I
should. Well, we don't need the name. It's not important.
All right. And he invited us to a barbecue as a housewarming.
Uh-huh.
And he had dozens of birds and whatnot in his garage. And I thought nothing of this. And my wife and I, we had a great time. We were, you know, joking and laughing. And there were several other neighbors. And he came up with have you ever gone back in time?
Oh.
And, you know, after the dinner and everything, you know, I thought it was a joke. And he pulled out a contraption and put it in the backyard, and it was about the size of a small triangular phone booth. And I laughed. I thought it was ridiculous. And I says, how can you travel in time back on that? And he said, well, let me show you. And he puts two or three birds, I think it was three birds, actually, in the contraption.
Were you the only other one there?
No, my wife was there.
Your wife was there.
And actually another couple was there.
Okay. You put birds in.
And he started up a generator. And it made a horrific noise. And it was like a lightning bolt. It was something that I can't even describe. I couldn't even see for about 10 seconds after it illuminated in the corner of the backyard.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was a trick. I thought it was a magic trick. And I laughed. I thought, this is fantastic. He's a magician.
Right.
And
probably what I think, too.
Well, about 10 minutes later, he said, no, watch it. It'll return. And with almost the same energy, not quite as much, it did return. There was a flash. And
the birds were back.
The birds were back. And I thought it was absolutely ridiculous.
Was this a regular physician kind of doctor? I mean, an internist or, you know, something or another normal, or was he...
He was in physics, I believe. Some kind of doctorate.
That kind of doctorate. Okay. All right.
Now, he takes the dog, his own personal dog,
uh-huh,
and he does this. Now, to try to speed up the story, I know you're on a time frame.
No. Let's take this as it unfolds.
I'm just nervous. I never really spoke about this.
I understand. No. Go
and,
ahead. Let it
actually
unfold.
Actually, it's quite scary because I'll get to the point in a minute. He put the dog into this booth type
mm-hmm.
thing.
Right.
And he energized it, and he did it again for a second time.
Dog
and
goeth and cometh.
Now the dog has gone.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 10 minutes later, he makes the dog return.
Mm-hmm.
Now he asks, do I have any volunteers? Now again, I think this is a magic trick.
Uh-huh. And so?
I volunteer.
Uh-huh.
Having probably a few too many Budweisers.
Okay.
At that particular time. And I sit in this contraption. Well, I've never been so scared in my life. It's like somebody put a flashbulb on a camera in my face.
Right.
That's all I can remember. I don't remember anything else.
You don't remember going somewhere.
I don't remember anything else but like a flashbulb in my face. That's all I can describe it as.
And the next thing you remember?
Well, a thump, like I fell out of bed, I've landed somewhere.
Right.
Now, I look, and I'm in the middle of some forest. I don't know where I am. I have no idea.
Uh-huh.
I can't tell you where I am. I have no idea. And I get out, and I'm like, oh, my God, where am I? I don't know where I am.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm in fear because I don't know what to think. I don't have any inclination. The only thing I can tell you is that it might be at dusk or dawn.
you could have been in the jungles of Brazil or something, for all you know.
I don't know. I can't even tell you. I don't know where I was.
So,
all I know is I was in some kind of forest.
Can you remember what you did? Were you able to function in this world, or were you just there and gone, or what?
No, I was able to get out of the vehicle, or whatever you want to call it.
It was there physically with you.
It was with me.
Gotcha, all right.
It was with me.
So out you go.
So I just stepped around, and I didn't want to go away too far away from the vehicle, figuring that I'd be stuck there.
Good figuring.
So, again, I don't know what time it is. It was either dusk or dawn. I don't know. And I got back in the vehicle. Maybe 3 minutes had taken place.
Right.
And there was like a little small, it's like a door. I don't want to call it a door, but it's an open, it really, there was nothing there. But it's like a door that you could open and you could walk out. I thought it was a joke.
Uh-huh.
And then, again, a flashbulb, bam. I don't remember anything. And I remember people laughing. And that's all I can remember.
Like, hey, look, he's back. Ha ha.
Yeah. And that was it. Now,
yes.
Then we get to the creepy part, and this is the scary part. Supposedly, this doctor that had invited us over, he just bought the house, he had only been living there for a month, commits suicide in his garage from some obscure reason.
This is some time later. How much?
This is approximately 3 weeks later.
3 weeks later, you find the doctor is now the PhD has committed suicide.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing on the premises. His car is gone. His and we're all we're wondering what happened.
Yeah.
And there is no basis for why this man has done this. He was a jubilant single man in his 60 years old, I would say. I think it was 59, if my memory is right. But anyway, and that was it. I mean, that was,
That's the story. That's plenty story. That's plenty of story, sir. Now, you think that you were either shifted geographically or shifted in time.
Oh, no doubt.
By whatever this was that he had. There was no trace of any of this machinery, I assume, after his death that you were aware of?
Well, no, not that I know of. And matter of fact, I inquired about it, and I made up a story, and I just happened to say, he was like an electronics tech, and he had stuff in the garage. Does anybody know about that? And
Do you think he's really dead?
I don't know. I just don't know. They had a hearse did drive up, and I did see them putting
body,
what appeared was a corpse, into the car. But again, without revealing any names or anything.
Please don't.
No, of course not.
I wonder if you were Dr. Mengele's first experiment there, or first human guinea pig. Have you ever wondered about that? In other words, he did it with the animals, but maybe, in sort of a jocular, ha ha ha, we're at a party, you've had a few beers, step in here and let me show you something really cool type thing.
Well, maybe.
You might have been his first.
It's a possibility, but.
And maybe he's now elsewhere, and what they think, the body they think they loaded in, is just the one they happen to load in this dimension.
It's a possibility, but after the fact that when I came back and, we were talking later, and as the party, broke up or whatnot, I said, exactly what happened? And he said, well, I've discovered a generating system that, to put it in layman's terms, will transport you back and forth into time. And I said, that's absolutely ludicrous. I've never heard of such a thing. And he said, well, that's why I had you do it first, to experience it, because otherwise you'd never believe me. And I looked at him and I said, I started thinking maybe he was crazy, but then I'm thinking, well, where was I? Where did I go?
Sure.
So, I mean, what better way to prove it to you? than to do it first and then talk about it.
Oh, listen, you're absolutely right. That's a whale of a story. That's a beaut. That's a real beaut. Maybe that man encountered somebody who had deciphered the nature of time travel or the way to achieve time travel. I really do believe that there is a way to do it. There are ways to travel in time. And again, you've got to think about this a little bit. Even assuming that it's not until we get to Pentium 9000 that we discover time travel, if there is such thing, such an eventuality, which I believe there will be, then they could easily be here now. And there could be people who along the way discover it, and then it sort of blinks out in terms of a retained technology. It just doesn't get out there. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. You have kind of a hum on your phone there.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. It's not your fault. What's up?
This is Vicki in Denver. I'm listening to you on KHOW.
Yes, ma'am.
And I thank you so much for meeting you when you were here book signing. That was a treat.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Anyway, I was wondering about the proposed movie. I guess originally it was going to be a TBS movie coming Global Superstorm.
And then
it got, I heard on your show it was going to be a bigger picture, and then production problems or something was the last I heard.
Not problems. The man who did Independence Day is the man doing that movie.
Oh, really?
And the latest that I've heard, and I watch very carefully and listen very carefully to any news of it, and the latest news I've got is that the special effects are going to be so spectacular.
Wow.
That it's going to be an additional year before release. They're working on that movie right now. So it's apparently really going to be something.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
And the working title, I believe, is The Day After Tomorrow, or perhaps even shortened to Tomorrow. That's the rumor mill. That's all I know right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, one other thing. The woman that called, who is a witch, into Wicca.
Oh, yes.
She was talking about objects like not working and things like that.
Yes.
Well, I've been into Wicca for about 30 years, and there are, just for anyone's knowledge, there are practices you can do to ground that energy so that it won't affect, you know, objects. Some people, it happens anyway, but if it is a result of ritual, there are things you can do in a meditative state.
Yeah, well, if anybody like that ever gets around me, I'm wrapping her up in ground water.
Yeah, really.
All right, thank you very, very much. Take care. Yeah, I'm going to just wrap her like a mummy with ground wire. Then she can be near my equipment. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you, Art?
I'm doing all right, sir. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I was listening, and you had a caller talking about the Catholics and their telescope.
Ah, yes, Mount Graham.
Well, I've been studying Genesis 6 for about 3 months now. It just really fascinated me.
Mm-hmm.
And it claims that women were having sexual relationships with renegade angels.
That's right.
And they were having these offspring, Nephilim or Nephelium, I believe.
Yeah, we're talking the flood here. I mean, you know, God got angry and then the flood and then took them all out, right?
Right, right. But what catches my eye is it says they were also around thereafter, meaning where are they now, you know? And a lot of people actually believe that, you know, these offspring or maybe angels and demons are what we know as aliens. And I think that would explain a lot. You know, people who are abducted and have these horrid experiences where these aliens do terrible things to them, maybe those are demons.
I think these women are still around. Really?
Well, you know, it might happen. And then it would also explain, you know, people who get abducted and have these great experiences and go to beautiful places. They might just be going to, like, a heaven and entertaining angels themselves. And what you were saying about...
Perhaps. But, you know, the whole process of angels falling and chasing after earth women and producing these... It just seems unheaven and godlike for all that to be going on.
Well, yeah, it would be. I'd say that, too. But, I mean, as you said yourself, the Catholics... religion itself, it's hard to say what they're letting us know, and they have all these secrets. They're watching something out there, you know. And
well, the one caller I had was like an apologist for this. I mean, there's more to it than just a casual interest in hunting you know, for what might be out there on the part of the Catholics. I've got nothing against Catholics. My wife is one. But they are obviously somewhat secretive, or even really secretive. Right. And they're looking for something more than just general astronomy fun from the Vatican on Mount Graham. You know, they're there for a reason. They're looking for something.
I agree. I don't know what they're looking for, and I don't think that they're going to make it known anytime soon either, though. I think Martin Luther helped, you know, prove that the Catholic Church, or any churches for that matter, they like to be in control of what they know and what they do. And so, I mean, I was just going to call and...
Well, I think religion originally was all about control.
Right.
Right?
Well, it was the government for a while there.
Or at least you could take that point of view. It certainly seems that way, that it's a very large controlling force when you control behavior.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's all I had, Art, but I'm just going to keep tuning in. I just wanted to throw out the whole theory of that idea, and I thank you for asking.
So, you think the Nephilim...
Well, the way the Bible describes them is they're kind of like giants, like Goliath was. And, I mean, I couldn't say. Maybe the NBA is a bunch of... But I'm not really sure, you know... if they are that nowadays alien...
The I've NBA, a bunch of Nephilim, huh?
Well, it could, you know, you never know.
It could be.
Maybe
all right, listen, I got to scoot, thank you. And then those women, you know, tempting, these tempting women. Could it be? Yeah, sure it could be. Middle of the night, Friday night, Saturday morning, I'm Art Bell.
I've had nothing but that love since the day I saw the cat at my door.
Presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
One morning, listen very carefully to the words of this song. It's kind of eerie stuff. Really very eerie, and I don't know, sort of, it hits home. It hits some kind of center. You've got to listen carefully to the words. Musical Rorschach test. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We'll plunge back into the night in a moment. Once again, into the unexpected on my time travel line. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. Where are you?
I'm in Kansas City, Missouri.
Kansas City, KCMO country, where they write the call letters right there on the police cars. Yes.
Right.
Yes, sir. What's up?
Well, about 44 years ago, I took a short time trip.
Oh.
As a result of an accident.
What kind of accident?
I was talking on the phone with my girlfriend, and I was struck by lightning. And some very strange things happened.
I would rather imagine so. Can you describe exactly what happened, what you can recall?
Sure. I was sitting on a couch that my mom and dad had covered with plastic, the 1960s stuff.
Yeah, of course, yes.
And when the lightning came through the phone, a ball of lightning came through the mouthpiece and knocked me about 20 feet. And it was very strange because all of a sudden I was outside my body and I was looking back at the area where the phone was, and I was still sitting there.
Sounds an awful lot like an NDE at this point.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, I was looking at myself before the lightning struck.
Oh.
And I was kind of hovering there. My existence was kind of hovering in the air, looking at myself. And I actually saw the electric pulse come in through the phone line. And I watched very slowly, in very slow motion, as the phone line began to melt. And the lightning came out of the phone and struck me. And everything was moving very, very slowly, like a slow-motion picture.
Right.
But as things were progressing, it started moving a little quicker and a little quicker. And at the point where the ball of lightning came through the mouthpiece of the phone and struck me in the head, and my body came off the couch, my body started moving towards my essence. And at that time, things started moving a little quicker. Like the best way to describe it is when you're watching a film and the reel starts to slip.
Yeah.
And it kind of flickers a little bit and then it starts to catch up.
It's like it just blew you right out of your body and then sort of out of the present time stream and then back again.
Right.
Well, such a large electromagnetic occurrence just might do exactly something like that.
And as my body got closer to my essence, things were speeding up and becoming almost more into normal time.
Yeah, yeah.
And as my body merged with my essence, there was a tremendous flash. And up to that time, I hadn't had any pain or any sensation. And when my body merged with my essence, it hurt. That's the best way I can describe it.
Well, that's absolutely incredible. Thank you very much. That is an amazing story. And it's kind of in the right context, frankly. A lightning hit is an unimaginable amount of voltage and electromagnetic energy just coursing through your body. So the effects that it could produce probably would include one in that category. Very, very, very interesting. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Kathleen. I'm in Middle Georgia.
Hi, Kathleen.
I'm actually listening to you on WLAC out of Nashville on my Bajan Free Play radio.
Way to go.
Real quick question first before I get to my point. I have a book on non-surgical back care that I'd like to send you. And how do I go about getting that to you?
Well, I suppose if you send it to the network, and don't ask me for an address because I don't have one right here. I don't know. Send it to the network. You know, they're very well-known, premier radio in Los Angeles. You'll find a way. It'll get to me.
Oh, okay, that'd be fine. Yeah, I fell off a telephone pole myself, so I understand about trauma injury.
Mm.
Wanted to ask about mass deja vu.
Mass deja vu.
Back in the early 70s, I was in Tallahassee at a horseback riding clinic. My sister and I were both there.
Yes.
And after the clinic, we a bunch of us decided to go to a restaurant. If I remember correctly, it was about 10 or 12 of us at the time. And the restaurant that we got to, they didn't have a table big enough, you know, to accommodate that many people.
Right.
So we sat, you know, some in one booth and some at the booth behind, and then the rest of them were at a round table nearby.
Right.
And I don't even remember the point that was being discussed, but I remember I leaned over the back of the booth to say something to somebody behind me, and I had this really strong feeling of deja vu. And you know how you have kind of like that little otherworldly experience when you get the deja vu.
You bet.
But I thought it was just me, and I just kind of turned and looked back at the people in the booth where I was sitting, which included my sister, and several of the people had an odd look on their face, and I turned and looked at the people behind me, and several of them had an odd look, and we were all like, did you just have a sense of deja vu?
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And it also included two other people at the table that were, you know, sitting nearby. but it got at least 8 out of the 10 people.
Deja vu, as in we've all been here just like this before?
At that moment, we all experienced it right at that moment.
But the deja vu itself, reflecting the feeling that you were all there in that exact situation at a previous time, is
yes.
that what the deja vu was?
Yes, it was. And I mean, and it wasn't like there was a significant thing happening. There wasn't. We were just having a conversation.
Oh, no, that's an extremely interesting observation.
But it was almost like it didn't get, there was... two people in the booth behind me that didn't get it at all. One person in the booth where I was sitting that didn't get it at all. And then there was a couple people at the other table that didn't get it. I think there was 12 of us all together. But the people who didn't get it did observe that we all had a funny look on our face. And they were like, what's going on?
Hmm.
But those of us who did get it, and it wasn't just a little light sense of deja vu, you know, where you kind of like look at something, shake your head, and go on. It was a strong feeling of deja vu.
A 7-point Richter deja vu.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I'm with you. And that it would occur to many people at one time, isn't that intriguing?
And like I said, my sister was there, and she got it, too. But I had not heard
any theories. Do you have any theories about it at all? Anything? Any thoughts about what force might have produced that, or why?
I think somehow it is a time shift in some way. And of course, since the movies Matrix have come out, kind of makes you wonder. But I just have to wonder if it's not a time shift of some sort. And every now and then, I will also dream about something occurring a day or two before it actually occurs.
Uh-huh.
So I think that somehow, you know, maybe we have perception of time.
Well, you see, I had one of these things happen to me, and once in my life, I really appreciate your call. Thank you. Mass deja vu, that is really intriguing, isn't it? I, too, have had one extremely serious encounter with the deja vu, and then one with precognition. So I've been down that lane, and so, you know, hearing about a mass occurrence, a mass deja vu, suggests that the phenomenon would not be attached to an individual or only an individual. It's so easy to dismiss when it's that because you think, well, you know, a little misfire in a neuron, right? But if it happens to 10 or 12 people out of a group, then it's got to be something else entirely, doesn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and try to make this quick for you.
Okay, where are you?
I'm in Wichita, Kansas.
And your first name?
Mark.
Okay, Mark.
My father presented this UFO time travel theory to me, and I thought it was perfect for tonight's topic.
Sure, fire away.
You know how when you travel through space, you're traveling, like if you take a piece of paper, you're traveling the distance of the piece of paper.
Right.
And if you fold that piece of paper end to end, then you could travel from one point to the, you know, one end to the other end without traveling the distance.
Physicists use this example all the time to explain the folding of space-time, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, my father believes that the UFOs that we see are actually ourselves from the future coming back, checking up on us or whatever you... however you want to put that one.
That's as good a way to put it as any. I can imagine that there might be reasons why a future us would be back here, perhaps observing, if not attempting to affect things. But, you know, that has to make you wonder. I had the experience during the time I was doing talk radio. The best example I can give you is that Nelson Mandela, instead of being freed in South Africa, many people wrote to me and said, you know, I have, in my memory is that Nelson Mandela was killed. That Nelson Mandela is dead. And that's what I remember, but of course that's not what occurred. Nelson Mandela, as we all know, was freed and went on to lead South Africa. But, you know, people had a different memory of it. And I got an awful lot of emails like that. After one person said it, I just had a flood of emails. Yeah, I had the same memory. So you know, maybe occasionally something gets changed in the time stream, and we all have vague recollections of the way it would have been had there not been that change, if you follow me.
That could also explain deja vu.
It sure could, couldn't it?
And how come the UFOs just seem to disappear or
yes.
appear across the sky?
Yes, and they do that, as in really disappearing, to our point of view anyway. Yeah,
yeah.
You're right. Very good thought, sir.
Yeah. And just on a side note, there's a movie called Happy Accidents. It's about time traveling with Marisa Tomei. You might want to check that out.
Any movie connected to time travel, I guarantee I will check out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
This is Jay in Magalia, California.
Hello, Jay.
Hey.
What's up?
It's good to hear your friendly voice again.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. You asked your guest a question last night about what is consciousness.
Oh, yes.
He stumbled around and didn't give you an answer, and you said, is it conscious awareness? And he
Self-awareness,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can give you the answer, I think, tonight.
Let's hear it.
You discussed also the infinity of the past and the infinity of the future.
Yes, sir.
Which relates to this. How do you measure the past? Well, we've got all kinds of measurements for the past and also for the future. But what about the present? We don't have any measurements for the present. You can say it's a year, you can say it's an hour, you can say it's a minute, or you can say it's a second, or you can say it's a nanosecond. But all of these can be split 50-50, half of it in
That's
the past
true.
And
yeah.
half in the future.
Very true.
So we all are a thin line, and that is consciousness, that thin line. And we are like a rock in a stream. The future is flowing towards us, and we make choices. And this is consciousness and conscious awareness, or self-awareness, whatever you want to call it. And it's that simple. That's the beginning of meditation, when you can reach that point and really understand and be conscious of your position.
Do you think that consciousness is collective?
Is what?
Do you think it's collective?
Oh, I think
there is a collective. In other words, we obviously have an individual consciousness that you sort of just described, but is it also collective?
Oh, absolutely. Not only on the subconscious level, but also on the superconscious level.
And is that what Princeton is measuring, perchance?
I think that's what they're trying to measure.
Well, they're getting readings indicating yeah. they're measuring something, which seems to coincide with mass occurrences, you know, like 9/11 or other giant things that affect consciousness throughout the world.
Yeah, but I think that they are trying to measure the non-physical physically, and that is difficult to do. A physical yardstick to measure something that's immortal.
Extremely difficult to do, but they may be on to it.
Yeah, they may be making some breakthrough there. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, well, I appreciate your call. And,
yeah, I wrote a book on this on the subject of immortality. And
you did?
Uh-huh, metaphysics. And just a couple of months ago, I finished it and got it printed. And I told George I was going to send him a copy of it. I'll send an autographed copy to you if you'd like.
I would dearly love that.
Okay, I'll send him two copies, one for you and one for him.
Please do that and hear me down there at the network. I want my copy. All right?
Very good.
All right, thank you very much, sir, and take care. On my time traveler line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I'm David from Albany.
Hello, David. Albany, New York.
I have a couple of things I'd like to go over with you.
Let's rock.
One of them is, do you know that the South American Indians look at going through life as though walking backwards because what you see is only memory?
Huh. No, I never thought about it that way. Interesting.
And the other thing is that what you are experiencing right this moment is brought about collectively from your likes, dislikes, experiences of love and hate and so on. And they're cumulative to the point where you have a picture which you establish feelings. And with your intentional focus, you then project it into what we call the curtain of reality.
The curtain of reality.
Yeah. If you drop this curtain, you'd see heaven.
So we're erecting a barrier between ourselves and heaven, is what you're suggesting.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The other item is that space and time, in fact, do have a similarity because time does not exist until you project it into 100% time and reality. Now, the other item about space, in Raja Yoga, we used to do mantras.
Yes.
And that creates space. Now, at times, when I'm driving a cab, and I notice that I'm putting in a lot of people and delivering them, and this time appears to be going very slow, because I look at the clock, and I see that I've done more in say, 2 hours than I would normally do in 12. And then it seems about 6.5 hours later, it begins to catch up with itself, and everything goes back normal.
Huh. That's really intriguing. Again, that's very much like another caller was telling us. You know, Phil got zapped by the lightning with a telephone. He was pushed out, and then the reverse process seemed to ensue, and he very quickly, in an increasing way, increasing exponentially in speed, came back. Pew! Zapped like that. So pretty interesting. As you consider the nature of time and the possibility of time travel, all of this is absolutely riveting. And it's been something that I've been studying perhaps more than I've even mentioned to you or that you've imagined as you've listened to my program. I've spent a fair amount of time on it and have some devices that I'm ever so tempted to test myself. And that was plural, as in more than one device. Sort of a little tantalizing place to leave it, huh? It has been an absolute pleasure hosting for these last couple of days. George will be back with you, I trust, on Monday. Certainly I believe that to be so. I think he is scheduled to be back in his chair again, and it's just been an awful lot of fun. You know, it's one of those things that somebody once told me is in your blood, radio that is. And as you know, it's securely in my blood. It runs like the SARS virus through my blood. So I'll be back again. You can depend on that. Thank you all. What a wonderful night. Friday night, Saturday mornings are great. I think we'll let Crystal take us out. As usual, y'all take care now. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
Night in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.